This podcast is brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short. You can find more podcasts and other resources on our website, www.acamh.org, and follow us on social media by searching ACAMH.
Hello, welcome to the In Conversation podcast series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I'm Jo Carlo, a freelance journalist with a specialism in psychology. Today I'm interviewing Senior Developmental Consultant Psychiatrist, Dr. Ramya Mohan. Ramya is known for her pioneering work in amalgamating the creative arts with neuroscience. She has created a therapeutic technique called CAPE, Creative Arts for Processing Emotions, and she is the medical and creative director of Imanis London, which promotes the integration of medicines, art and neuroscience. Start with an introduction about who you are and what you do.
Hi, thank you for having me here. I'm a senior consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist. My training has been largely in the London area with South London, Maudsley and Great Ormond Street hospitals. And I've been an NHS consultant within CAMS since 2008. Mm-hmm. More recently, I have had a flexible way of working across the East and the West. So I still work within the NHS, but I've also been doing community development work in India, mm-hmm. and also clinical grassroots work there as part of an evolution. And yes, I'm the medical director and creative head of Imanis London. It was a concept that I conceptualized, bringing together neuroscience with the creative arts to improve ability in society, with a particular focus on children and young mm-hmm. people. So through that, we do a lot of work around projects and events and awareness work. I try and juggle many hats alongside that. I'm a performing musician and composer, with three singles and two albums, and also an exhibiting artist. And I write, and I do invited talks. So most importantly, I'm a mother of two young children, two girls. So juggling a few balls in the air, really.
Sounds very rich.
Thank you so much.
There's been lots of neuroscientific research on the power of music and arts to affect positive change in mental health. Tell me about your work. How do you connect neuroscience with adolescent psychiatry?
So for me, I'm trained in Indian classical music, in two mm-hmm. styles of Indian classical music. And as I went into medicine, for me, it was inevitable that the two worlds had to go along hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was a bit of a natural progression, though it was quite difficult. Sometimes you come back after a long day's work in the hospital, and then I actually realized that the creative arts were actually literally pumping me up and giving me renewed energy. So they were balancing things out for me. So personally, it was a natural progression for me. And then when I went into child and adolescent psychiatry, in particular, I was struck by how children and young people, it's when you're trying to communicate with somebody who's a bit wary, you're not that communicative. For example, working with autistic children or children who have who've been through a lot of trauma. You realize that actually it's a good icebreaker. Mm-hmm. Especially in adolescent, it's quite cool to be able to chat to them about the most recent album they've been listening to. It's a good icebreaker, but what it does is it paves the way for effective communication. Right. And sometimes in some of the more non-communicative children, you're actually doing a lot of communication without communicating verbally. So it's brilliant as a tool, I realized, for communication mm-hmm. and engagement and supporting resilience in a very different way. So the first step really for me at that point was, let's look at what research is available. What are the gaps? How do you connect the dots in terms of the research that's available and clinical applicability? Mm. That was literally the first step. And the second was about getting feedback from the users and the young people themselves, and increasing awareness of what mental health is about. And I've managed to do this by a mix of, through IMNS London. It's been a brilliant platform. Lots of events, albeit music shows and art exhibitions portraying different types of, kind of different aspects or facets of mental health. Doing media awareness work. So it's been a mix of things. And more recently, of course, bringing it all together through CAPE as well has been a very rewarding way of doing it.
So I want to understand a bit more about CAPE. I know it's an interactive, practical method. It combines neuroscience with music. Can you explain a little bit more about how it works and why it's particularly applicable to children and young people?
Okay. So we know that children, I'll talk about the children, young people component following on from what CAPE is about. So CAPE, we know that, I mean, music has been an integral part of our lives and our cultures, you know, from time immemorial. But there's been music therapy, there's been art therapy. But when I started to think about CAPE, it was really to try and balance out the what stuck me as the capacity demand imbalance in the, on the NHS. So with that in mind, I started to think about how we could bring neuroscience together with some of the psychological components that we use through therapies, and how that can actually be used in a way to create a structure and a standardized format. So CAPE is built on a neuroscientific basis, on research on emotions in the brain, and it it kind of evolved from there. So to come to the second part of your question, the idea was that it is globally applicable. So it does have both Eastern and Western components integrated into it in various forms, not just the creative arts, but also the therapeutic principles that we use in our day-to-day practice, but all of them with a basis in what we know about neuroscience and the brain. And it is particularly helpful and particularly applicable, I think, to children and young people, because we know they have developing brains. Now, if you look at the research, I mean, it's a bit mixed, because in some ways the developing brain is on your side when you're trying to learn and evolve. On the other hand, we're also talking about growth and development and adolescence and hormones. So it's not very receptive in a different kind of way. So it's a very chaotic brain in that sense. So at that point, if you're actually able to introduce a positive template or a blueprint to support emotional health, that would be brilliant. So you're actually setting the stage for a healthier society, young people growing into adults who are more emotionally self-contained and resilient. And that was the whole thinking around CAPE.
And can you explain, so if you have a patient, can you explain how the music is introduced? I'm just trying to understand on a practical level what actually happens.
So CAPE has actually been a technique in evolution. We started off, we all have to start somewhere, so we started off by setting a structure and a format, supporting young people with their emotional understanding and labeling. And as we evolved, because it's been around for about 5 years now, and we have a specific version for children and young people that I have, so there are users who are using it outside of the clinical context, but we've also within a research cohort, we've actually used it within the clinical setting as well with young people. And what we have realized is that the more we integrate feedback, the more applicable it becomes on a very ground level. Because we know, I mean, when you look at research into the into music in particular, for example, there's so much diffuse and mixed research. So there's research on rhythm, on tone, on Eastern, Western. But what really came across through all these years of, you know, feedback and learning and integrating that into CAPE is that ultimately, when you're talking about, if you break it down, music is quite simple. So when you think about Indian music, there are seven notes. So you have Sa-ri-ga-ma-pa-da-ni-sa. These are the seven notes. Mm-hmm. And in West music, you've got Do-Re-Mi-Fa-Sol-La-Ti. So it's literally, it's about how synergistically they come together mm-hmm. to evoke a feel. Right. So it's all about that, really. And that actually makes the music, makes the sounds that come together really globally applicable. This was a very important thing that we have. As long as it's in the right proportion and mix. So finding the right proportion and mix was a huge process of the evolution of Cape. Mm-hmm. And now where we are at, we've got, Pala data on the effectiveness of the current structure. Mm-hmm. And and we've integrated all those findings into an app that's coming out okay. to make it more accessible for children and young people.
Okay. And I know you use Cape to support maternal child and family mental health. Can you talk through some of the interventions that you have found to be helpful in supporting families with new babies?
Okay, so when we talk about a family or when we talk about a new baby, what we have to remember is that all this starts well before birth. Mm. We have to start looking at things from creation, from the point of creation, really, because pregnancy in itself is such a tumultuous time. Mm-hmm. For a variety of reasons, I mean, apart from, again, you know, the hormonal changes, the changes to one's life and functioning, we're also looking at a certain group of women who may have a pre-existing disposition to mental health difficulties, or those who are mentally ill and who are on medication. And you will find, if you look at the psychological components, things like adaptation and resilience come into play a lot more in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, when you look at the pharmacological aspects of pregnancy, we're fairly limited in what medication we can use mm-hmm. as well, which makes it all the more important to draw upon other resources like CAPE, wherein we are trying to address kind of the healthy aspects of the mind, as mm-hmm. it were, and try and consolidate that. And of course, we know that there is a lot of research around the stress response and how that can impact on the baby in utero. Yes. So it stands to reason that these are areas where it is actually going to be quite supportive. Mm. And then when we move on into the postpartum period again, we know, unfortunately, that postnatal depression, the incidence is about 3 to 4 times more. The incidence of depression is 3 to 4 times more in the postpartum mm-hmm. period. We know that. Again, the same limitations around medication because of the breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. Lots of other issues come into play. How the mother bonds with the child, the attachment, the bonding, and how the family itself reconfigures, how the couple interact mm-hmm. with each other as new parents. There are so many factors that come into play, and we have realized that through the case studies, working with pregnant women and women who are new mothers and families that are new parents, mm-hmm. That all of these factors are positively impacted upon when you start early and use, because it supports emotional health throughout the pregnancy and beyond.
Right. Mm-hmm. You've talked about how CAPE is evidence-based, and I'm wondering if you can say a little bit more about the evidence. So what research is there that supports the use of the creative arts as a tool for helping children and young people with their mental health issues?
So within child and adolescent mental health, as with other areas as well, the evidence is much lesser as compared to the adult population. So when I talk about this, I will talk about it in a more general sense. Mm-hmm. Creativity itself, I think, through the years has been, again, research has been mixed. I mean, mm-hmm. we know that many famous individuals, creative individuals, had a history of mental illness. Mm-hmm. However, there isn't much robust evidence to support that. You know, there is a very strong link as such. Mm-hmm. But families of creative individuals are potentially more likely to develop mental health problems. But when we go back traditionally, the way we have looked at, the brain, the way the brain is set up, mm-hmm. people talk about right and left-handedness of the brain, you know, the creative brain, the logical brain. But more and more, we're realizing that there is a lot of interconnectedness that's happening. Mm-hmm. And in that context, I think what particularly really interested me is now more recently there are more kind of organized studies looking at, say, the impact of biochemical markers, imaging, the stress response. And what particularly interested me was alongside the qualitative data, which looks at things like resilience and adaptation and self-esteem, the imaging data is actually very promising, quite exciting, because now in real time we can actually look at the impact, which areas of the brain are actually lighting up. And what really made me interested was that if you look at the areas that generate satisfaction within ourselves, those areas are lit up when there is a reward there. Say, for example, you've solved a puzzle, but then those are the same areas that are actually being supported to actually activate when one is using music or poetry or the creative arts. And that was the whole basis. It's about supporting, self-sufficiency and happiness in oneself. That was the basis of it. And the idea really was to bring together the qualitative aspects that we already know within therapies and the quantitative aspects in a way that hasn't been done before, to make it applicable to standardized populations of people, to larger cohorts. And that was the whole basis of CAPE. We've had some very, very promising studies of pilot data effectiveness in children and young people. And more recently, we've had some really brave and courageous young people coming out to talk about the impact CAPE has had on their lives after having used it consistently for a few months. So it's work in progress.
Right.
It's work in progress because it is an evolving field. New things are coming out every day. But it's all looking very promising, and the evidence base is only growing.
What kind of feedback have you had from the young people then?
It's been absolutely humbling, because it's one thing when you have a concept. Because when I first started looking at this in 2010, it was a very novel concept. Now there is more understanding and awareness, and it's growing. But it's one thing having an idea, but when you're actually seeing it starting to work, to take shape and to work and to have an impact on the children, young people that you see, I think that's a brilliant experience. They've all been very positive about it. We've had a lot of learning from them, because at the end of the day, the young people are our best teachers, and we look at them and we listen to them, and we can only get better.
Rami, you're a composer, a musician and performer, as well as a psychiatrist. And I'm wondering whether there was a sort of eureka moment when you realised that you could combine the two. How did that
come about? I think my life's been a set of eureka moments, one after the other. And it's been brilliant, really, because personally, I grew up with... I laugh about it with my husband. I say, look, I've got two children in my brain. One is my scientific child and the other one's my creative child. And it's as it turns out, I ended up having two children as well, two very different personalities. And of course, we see so many young people day in and day out in our clinical practice. And for me, it's about the eureka moment was really about, hey, you know what? I can't let them just fight with each other. I have to get them to work together as a team. I have to get them to, for me personally, really, within myself, for it to make sense. It is teamwork. It is about, making sure that they are working with each other in a coherent kind of way, and also learning from them.
Right.
So that's been my eureka moment, and I found that I find these eureka moments through the day, different stages of my own children's development, different stages of the evolution of CAPE. So yeah, it goes on.
So if we're talking about integration, let's talk about the integration of Eastern and Western music, and you integrate that with therapeutic techniques. Can you say something about how and why this integration works? The musical styles, I assume, are quite different from each other.
Yes. As I mentioned, I'm a trained classical musician, trained in the Eastern style of music, two different Eastern styles of music. And through the years, I've had the good fortune of collaborating and working with musicians across the East and the West, mm-hmm. because most of my working life and professional life has been in the West, mm-hmm. in the UK. I think that has brought a very rich level of experience for me. And more recently, especially with the past 3 years, where I've been actively juggling my work in both the East and the West, I think it has only enriched that whole experience. So I think it gave me a very good idea of what works well across the East and the West. And ultimately, music is music. It is a universal language. It is about identifying what works and identify and bringing it together in the right proportion and mix to make it accessible to as wide a population as possible. Because ultimately, it's not about, is it this style of music? Is it this tone? It's ultimately about the feeling or the emotion it evokes in the listener and how that power can be harnessed to support and guide children and young people towards emotional health.
So is that integration used with, it's the same integration of Eastern and Western music used with both populations if you're working in India?
That's right. And I'd like to think over the years that we have developed CAPE and taken feedback and built on it, that it's a good mix. And this has been borne out by, users so far. And we've tried to take on board the best of what we know about the neuroscience aspects of things, the best of Eastern and Western music in terms of the research available, and try and bring them together in a way that can apply to wider population. So it's not a genre or a musical style, really. Right. It's about the essence or the ethos of how it's used and what's used to support and promote mental health.
Ramya, what else have you been able to bring to the field of psychiatry from your background as a British South Indian?
Apart from the cuisine that my colleagues love, I think it puts me in a very unique position because as a trainee, I've been around areas of inner London which have huge levels of deprivation and need, but at the same time are very multicultural. Right. So I've worked in South London, East, and across. And as we move on, as a consultant, I've also worked in very, very kind of white British heavy areas as well. Mm-hmm. More recently, of course, in the Indian subcontinent as well. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, has made me quite sensitive to the complexities around culture from various perspectives, especially when you talk about young people. There are so many perspectives that come into my mind, cultural, philosophical, spiritual, and certainly, you know, the whole ethos of being a young person. The cultural variability is highly complex and it's multi-layered. Right. So I think it's given me a very unique understanding around this area, really, and also a very unique understanding of mental health presentations across the East and West. And all this has gone into my events and projects because the whole idea has been about tailoring it to the audience. So for example, you take a music show, or it might be an art exhibition. It's about tailoring it to the audience at hand. So over a period of time, it's been a process of learning to tailor key messages to the audience. But at the same time, creating practical and creating awareness in a very practical manner about also identifying the commonalities across cultures and using that as a way of bringing, because that's the way the world is going. It's a global world at the moment. So it's about introducing that concept within young people through the medium of music. Also, for a multicultural society like the UK, I think what is very much needed is more of a multicultural understanding, which hopefully I've been able to bring in a very small way. I've worked with the media around that about increasing, kind of talking about cultural presentations within mental health. A lot of work wherein we have tied music and art events with a charitable component. component all geared towards mental health for specific populations of people and engaging those communities, but also at the same time creating community mosaic art projects where you're recognizing that what we're all individuals, but we're part of this mosaic that forms our community. So using lots of abstract components within the creative arts, but at the same time trying to introduce an educational component from my own background as a scientist as well as a clinician.
So I'm interested in whether the interventions themselves are adapted according to the client group. So when you're working with grassroots patients in India, will the intervention be the same as when you're working in inner city London or?
The interventions, so there are certain commonalities which are applicable to everyone. But then, of course, so there are off-site components, there are online components, so there are clinical components as well as self-guided components. So when all these are brought together, again, it's a CAPE is a very structured program which integrates both clinical components and offline as well as online components, and that is that's the beauty because it then lends itself to be flexible. So whilst their young people are still working against a framework or with a framework, there is also scope for taking into account in the offline component, taking into account the individuality of the presentation. So you're creating something wherein it is both resource and expertise effective, but at the same time recognizing that every individual and their mental health needs are different.
Thank you. You're a great advocate for bringing science, medicine and the arts together.
Thank you.
How well received is this concept by policymakers in the UK?
It's been work in evolution. When I started out in 2010, it was a completely new concept and you have to carve out a path where there is none. But the whole ethos behind this was, I was working as an NHS consultant and day to day I could see that there was a huge capacity demand imbalance. Working with brilliant people who are obviously bending over backwards to try and do the best they can. But it got me thinking that we need something that is more kind of effective, and accessible in many ways, cost and labor and expertise effective. And that was kind of how it came about. So I would hope that policymakers would be more and more interested in the work we've been doing. I have been invited to the Houses of Parliament, the House of Commons and Lords, where I've had to talk about some of my work, where I've had a chance to interact with some policymakers. It's work in progress and I'm very keen to see it implemented in a structured, standardized manner where it's resource effective and at the same time, it needs to be evidence-based and we need to have the right provision for training and ensuring that the expertise is equal. So, any policymakers out there who are listening, please do get in touch with me. I'd be delighted to provide you more information or help out.
And are your techniques being used in the health service or through CAMHS?
Yeah, very much so. Within an integrated research pilot and feedback model that we've been talking about, definitely. And we're in the process of setting up multicentric trials and validation trials, even within the NHS. All work in progress, hopefully, as part of making this more mainstream and hopefully at some point getting integrated into the guidelines as well.
And how receptive are other clinicians to this idea of using the creative arts to support children and young people with their mental health issues?
They're curious, they're very supportive, they're inquisitive. And I think, I've been very lucky to have actually worked with some amazing, brilliant clinicians, having worked with a multidisciplinary team that's very open and receptive to things. I think it's not so much the interest that clinicians have. I think it's to do with resource limitations and the fact that, this is something that needs to be integrated into the resource provision, really, for it to kind of support support and complement and consolidate the work that our clinicians are doing.
So if clinicians are listening to this podcast or watching this interview, how could they start to integrate some of these ideas into their own practice?
It's not using the creative arts is it's been around. There's been music therapy, there's been art therapy. I have attempted to just amalgamate principles really from research and knowledge from research and my own clinical practice in a way that is balanced and makes sense for it to be applied in a larger cohort of people and vulnerable, you know, certain special need populations. That's the whole idea, really. So the CAPE app will hopefully support that. I think with real-time feedback, because it's integrated real-time feedback and also, information about effectiveness and the evidence base is only growing. It's hoped that the CAPE app will hopefully soon be a companion for both clinicians as well as the children, young people and the families that we see moving forward to support them in a more comprehensive way and support clinical practice really day to day.
So Ramya, where can people go to find out more about your work and CAPE?
So you can check out my website www.ramyamohan.com or the organisational website www.imanaslondon, which is spelled imanaslondon.com, and we'll be updating it fairly regularly with all the new updates about CAPE and everything else that follows all our events and projects. Yes.
To learn more about Dr. Ramya Mohan and her research and the work of ACAM, visit the ACAM website www.acam.org and Twitter at ACAM. ACAM is spelled A-C-A-M-H.
This podcast was brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short.